Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I think it's important to strive for goals, you know, long-term goals like that, you know, 5-10 years out. But also, I think it's important at the same time, and this is something I live by. You know, I am pretty, you know, open to change. And I know that, you know, you could plan all you want, things happen. And the most important part is understanding how to adapt.
This is Super Fast Business with James Schramko. James Schramko. Helping you build your business super fast.
James Schramko here. Welcome back to superfastbusiness.com and in our continuing interview series with other business experts. It's my absolute pleasure to bring to the show our super guest who's big in the podcasting space, Pat Flynn. How are you?
I'm doing excellent, James. How are you?
Very good. Now, we have a lot of listeners in common. I'm sure many of them listen to Smart Passive Income, which is your amazing podcast. And they quite often talk about you in my private forum. And I think you are one of the poster children, the benchmark for getting a big, sticky, engaged audience and really putting that content marketing out there, which has kind of come into vogue lately. Would you say it's picking up?
Yeah, definitely. I think people are starting to see what just putting yourself out there is like and what it could do for your business and brand. And I think, you know, a big reason for my success is also I'm very open and honest and just I'm myself. I'm very personable. They tell me often at conferences that they feel like they know me, which is awesome. I mean, it's pretty incredible to have somebody come up to you and say like things that they wouldn't normally say to somebody they just met. And, you know, I really feel like the bond I have with my audiences is truly one of a friendship. And I'm just so thankful for that.
It seems that way with podcasts that when I've got an introductory thread, when people join my community, the first thing they usually say is, I heard you on a podcast. And I think I've heard you say this on your show before. That's probably the single biggest source of your listenership. Is that how they find you for referrals, perhaps?
I ran a survey on my blog, just my blog readers. I asked them, how did you first find out about me or Smart Passive Income? And the number one way was through my podcast, through iTunes. It was actually 20% about. So one out of every five people who have found my site have found me through my podcast, which was a very surprising and almost ridiculous number to me. Number two was through YouTube, and number three was links and mentions on other sites. And then it was Google and Facebook and Twitter and everything else that most people typically primarily talk about. Yeah. And so that's when I ramped up the frequency of the podcast earlier this year to weekly as opposed to twice a month. And that was because when I went to New Media Expo, everyone was just talking about the podcast. Hey, Pat, dude, I love your podcast. Like nobody would mention the blog. They would only mention the podcast. And it was just, you know, that's why I've been a big proponent and advocate of people starting their own if they have the ability to.
What are your thoughts on frequency and show format? Because a lot of podcasters approach it differently. We've both spoken to John Lee Dumas, and he's obviously got the high frequency thing kicking in. There's the shows where you can interview someone else. There's the ones where you do it by yourself. What do you think is the perfect recipe?
Well, I think it depends on what would best serve your audience. That's always sort of the primary motivator for me to do whatever it is that I want to do. And that's why I feel, you know, if you go to my show list, some of them are 30 minutes long and some of them are an hour and 30 minutes long. The last one I did with Clay Collins was an hour and 30 minutes long. And that's because I didn't want to stop talking about everything we were talking about. And again, that was with the audience in mind. And so, you know, as far as length of show and also consistent, I think it's really important to come out with a show consistently. But as far as, you know, whether you do it solo or interview style, it's definitely easier. Well, I don't want to say it's easy. It's easier compared to doing it solo to have other people, you know, on your show and just making sure you're asking the correct questions and getting deeper as opposed to speaking the entire time, which is and still is somewhat difficult. But as long as you know the topic, it's almost like presenting in front of a large crowd. You're just speaking to a microphone. So, you know, some topics lend itself to just a solo show if I know that particular topic very well. And some topics I want to discover more information about where it would make sense for me to bring an expert on.
Right. So, yeah, I'm kind of like you, a little mixed bag. I put out videos, I put out audios from this particular show, someone would expect normally a 3 to 5 minute video, which happens probably three times a week. And then occasionally they'll get a run of audio interviews. Like I'm pretty much interviewing three people a week at the moment. So I'm popping out these 30, 40, 50 minute discussions. And I think people are, they like to have their consumption challenged a little bit in some ways. That's probably the big, the big topic I had with JLD was about using the same show format each time. And it's been both his strength, but also causes a lot of churn.
Yeah. Are you ready to ignite? Like, I know that format so well, I can just basically, you know.
Well, the listeners do too. And I think, but the thing that fascinates me, there must be, obviously on the sheer number of downloads he gets, there must be a huge interest in having that consistency. So I think some people crave consistency and hang on to it. And then other people, and I probably put myself in this bucket, are totally fine with change. I recognize that change delivers opportunity because I'm a problem solver and most of the things that I have in my business are solving problems, and a lot of them are continually changing. One of the examples would be the SEO field where, as you've seen from your niche site Jules and stuff, you know, whatever worked a year or two ago really needs to be reviewed now.
I think with JLD too, he has a unique opportunity because he's been so consistent and doing the same thing over and over again. The moment he does something different, everybody's going to pay attention to it, whatever that is. You know, whether it's a show about a product he comes out with or just something different, something he really wants people to pay attention to, it's going to be really easy for him to do that.
Now, that's exactly why I contacted you, Pat. You did something different and it fascinated me because of all the things that I do, my strength is the strategy side of things. I've built up quite a substantial business by recognizing what's going on out in the market, making the changes, and you've taken this big leap from primarily affiliate marketer to product creator. Would that be a fair sort of statement of what's happened?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And tell our listener what happened when you released your product.
Well, it's interesting. You know, I've been blogging for 5 years and I've been producing free content over and over and over again, and primarily earning a significant amount of income through affiliate marketing. So sharing and promoting and recommending other people's products. And these are, of course, products that I've used myself that I don't mind putting my name next to and trusting my trusting them to take care of my audience for me. But, you know, just actually July 1st of this year, 2013, I released my own product. And, you know, I got a wide range of response from thank you, finally I've been waiting so long for this, to you're on the dark side now, what are you doing, why are you doing this, I can't trust you anymore. And it was very, very interesting. You know, I almost knew it was going to come though, because when you do something for so long, such as give away information for free, and that's all you do, when you finally create something and ask people to pay for it because you know it'll provide value for them, you're going to get some backlash from people. And so I got a little bit of backlash, and there were a few loud and outspoken people who left comments on that launch post, and they're there. You could read them now. I don't take those things down if they're respectful. And you know, they were respectful, but they were strong. And, you know, it's just really interesting. But I mean, what was really cool is before I even saw those comments, I saw a string of, you know, 8 to 10 comments on each of those sort of negative comments from my audience who were defending me already, which I thought was incredibly awesome. I'm so thankful and blessed for the incredible community I have at SPI. But, you know, with those negative comments, I kept them up there, and they're worth paying attention to because they are in my audience too. And it's a learning experience. And this was obviously the first time I came out with a product. And so I wanted to learn as much as I could about the process. And yeah, we could definitely go much deeper into that. But I knew it was coming. And it's just kind of interesting.
It is interesting. And I think one of the key points that is fascinating about your machine is the customer engagement levels, the number of comments you have on your posts. I'd love to talk to you about some of the nitty-gritty bits and pieces. But what would you say a listener who's listening to this, who has a blog, could do to start getting that kind of customer engagement, not necessarily the polarizing controversy side of things?
Sure.
I'm talking about, how did you build that base in the first place?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of different reasons. I think I just make it really comfortable and you know, on my blog to leave comments and make it easy, really easy to do so for. So making sure people know that they're going to get heard. And in the beginning, it was really easy for me when people would leave comments to reply to each of them. And I think that was a great way to train my audience over time to start, you know, commenting more, knowing that I was actually there reading it. Now, recently, with the hundreds of comments on every post and everything else I have going on, it's been, I mean, it's impossible. My wife would kill me if I replied to every single comment. But I think they know that I'm there and I'm reading them, and I will respond to the important questions and things like that. But again, also my audience has learned to reply to other people too, which is cool. So it sort of turns into a forum on each and every blog post I write, where people are contributing and adding more to the content. They're answering everybody else's questions and continuing the conversation, which I think is amazing. I also just remind people in a lot of my posts to, you know, go ahead and leave a comment. Like, they you have my permission to do it. And I'll also tell them, you know, ask them for their opinion. Really do my best to encourage engagement and to encourage people to participate. And I think over time, people have just learned to do that on my site. And plus, I have a really big fat number with the number of comments on my posts. And so when that number is really big, a lot of people want to contribute and add to that number. You know, it's social proof.
Absolutely. I agree with everything there except for one thing. And I think that the accessibility on that free blog is probably at the expense of $500,000 to $1 million worth of forum posts behind a paywall. Mm-hmm. because I've noticed I probably put out a little more content. I have less comments. And probably I'm not putting anywhere near the level of perfection to the content. And I think you would say you're a perfectionist, right?
I am, although I've learned recently that, you know, perfectionism is really just a form of procrastination and fear. So, you know, I've learned to recently just go with it. I used to spend way more time editing my posts, and you know, I still edit my posts and things like that. But I and also I've obviously just with the experience just have gotten better over time at understanding how to craft blog posts and things like that.
Gotcha. So to give you some context, in we've got about 45,000 posts in my forum, and mm-hmm. that's about a year old. The thing is, I think because people are able to really go deep, and you talked about it, if you're getting paid to do it, then I think your wife would probably say, yeah, Pat, go for it, post in the forum or whatever. But then the one thing is taking the blog out of the equation. Now the member to member ratio is significantly more interactive. So something to consider perhaps for the future.
Yeah, I mean, I can definitely see that. But the product I came out with actually has a forum element in it. So it kind of creates higher value in that product as well.
But I suspect that a lot of people don't need it because you've got such an open to the public discussion facilitation there.
Correct. I guess the differentiator.
I've seen the same thing happen where they start a Facebook group or a LinkedIn group. The best way that people have killed their ability to make money from a firewall where they could deliver more value because they're paid mm-hmm. a lot more is to deliver a lot on the front line there.
Right.
So really what the topic we're talking about here is, I wonder how much is too much free? And I wonder if you've reflected on that since your foray into the monetization. I see your business like a big flywheel mm. and it spins fast. It has a lot of noise, a lot of action.
Definitely.
As soon as you touch it to tap the money out of it, a lot of the people will stop. It just bogs down.
Yeah.
But you've found your core people, and those people, 10% of the people who bought that product would definitely take a way more expensive product just because they'd like you to solve a bigger problem, and more than likely they have a bigger problem if you're able to solve
it. Right. I mean, I think another important issue here, I mean, besides the free thing, is the fact that I was only making money by recommending other people's products. And so I didn't even have complete control of my business model.
Oh, absolutely. And I'd love to talk about that further. Let's use an example. I think from your income report, which is both brave and a tremendous reason for why people keep coming back and following you, you publish your earnings. And I think one of the standout earnings is Bluehost.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been kind of ridiculous how much that has grown.
So wind back about 6 or 7 years when I started, I had a six-figure income from one product, but then the product turned out to lose touch with the market, and I had to make an integrity call, and in the end, I switched off a $5,000 a month profit, which it had sort of dwindled down to, from 10 a month, and I switched it off because I didn't feel that people should use that solution anymore. In fact, I suggested that they use WordPress, which, as you know, is predominantly free, give or take a theme. Right. Luckily, swinging from that vine created a new opportunity for me to grab onto another vine. And, you know, I've had Clay Collins back many times on my show to talk about his products, because things that complement people who have WordPress sites are quite lucrative, and hosting would be one of those. Do you feel that you could be single source dependent on the bulk of your income for a product that may be suffering a bit of a personality or publicity problem at the moment?
I would definitely not risk that. And you'd obviously have to assess the situation in that company and make sure things are good. I would not, you know, it would be very risky to do that. So, you know, like I said before, I only promote and recommend products that I've used, and I make sure each month I actually go into my affiliate earnings and see which products I'm earning from, and just sort of ask myself, okay, should I continue to promote this? And I've actually dropped a lot of things that I've made money from in the past because they're not things that I feel like I should be promoting anymore, or, you know, they're just not working anymore. And so even though I could continue to earn an income, I don't from those. And I always, like you, just shift for what's best for my audience. And I really want to commend you on that, because, I mean, that's a significant amount of money that you have to let go. And it's great that you found this other vine. And I just have to, you know, reiterate how amazing Clay's products are, for sure.
Oh, yeah. Like, the guy's super. There's no wonder you went for an hour and a half. I had him fly all the way over here and speak at my event for Fastweb Formula Community, and he was like a standout presentation they rave about. I posted it for free on Superfast Business.
Nice.
And people thought it was the best thing they've ever seen. I mean, the guy is he's like a little Steve Jobs. So I think he's so passionate. He's so clear on his vision. And
yeah, you can hear in his voice just how much he loves what he does.
He's the real deal. Now, that's the thing. So in my case, I used to promote HostGator, and I personally switched all of my sites. I moved 1,800 sites across from there to my new provider because they seemed to have changed hands, and I felt that my dedicated server went offline and they didn't respond to me for over a day. They came back and apologized. They offered a rebate, but I felt that I could no longer recommend that. So, and interesting.
Same thing happened to me with Servant.
Right. Well, I think the same group is now buying up a lot of these different server companies, including Bluehost. Yeah, I'm really glad you're getting into the product side of it. You're a natural born product creator. I had a look at your podcast course, and the quality of it is off the charts. You have a real knack for creating great work. And I imagine that if you've got so much database of what people's challenges are, you'd be in a great position to be able to continuously pump out your own products. Do you have more of them scheduled?
Well, I mean, the one I came out with will probably be the flagship one. I don't want to be, you know, the marketer that I used to hate getting emails from all the time about all these different products, you know. So everything's going to be packed into this one. But, you know, it's funny how you mentioned, you know, I thought about that because obviously I'm doing really good with Bluehost as an affiliate. Could I do something like that on my own? And I could. But the thing is that that's not the sort of lifestyle I want to live. I don't want to manage a team of people who manage a hosting company. You know what I mean? And so,
no, there's a great cost. If you're going to vertically integrate, you have to take on the costs and the risks and the service responsibilities.
Yeah,
so it comes down to personal goals. Like, what result do you want?
Absolutely.
What skill set do you have?
Should always.
Because I've got 50 something people in the Philippines. So I have a very different background to you and a different business model. So for me, it's a logical step for you. I can see from your income report you have a very low staffing cost. I'd happily swap those staff costs. And you've got a very efficient model. The only thing is, I guess it's like you say on your blog, I think you're not a millionaire yet or something, but maybe that's not even the goal.
No, the goal is to just be at home with my family and be financially secure and give them all the options.
Which surprised me why you're getting into the speaking stuff, because that is a energy and time intensive sap of a thing to do. I used to do speaking and, you know, the travel. You'll be probably there in a hotel, hungry at 2 a.m, thinking, what the hell am I doing while my family's over in another state? And why am I here? And then you'll get all these maniacs wanting a piece of you, and they feel like even if they talk to you that they're instantly going to be a millionaire.
Yeah, I mean, it does take time away from the family, which goes against that sort of, I only want to be with them all the time. But the purpose of doing that is to, you know, to expand on my skills as a communicator, which will help my business. And also, you know, for me personally, that is something that is very fulfilling to be on stage and speak and help a group of people in that way. And my wife knows my, you know, that I'm doing that, you know, ultimately for them. And that's sort of something we've talked about together. And I will say personally, it's always like great to come back home to the family, if that makes sense. Like, I will just...
Yeah, well, you realize what you've got.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. So it's nice to take those sort of 2 or 3 days off to come back to the family. And, you know, I'm not speaking as much as I could. I turned down over a dozen speaking gigs in 2013 just because I didn't want to be away for too long.
Well, once you speak once, you pop your head up. It's like everyone wants a piece of you. So it's a big rabbit hole. And from someone who's traveled around the world speaking at various stages, you really have to pick your mark. I'm about to actually travel over your side there and speak at a couple of events, about three things, and they're all specifically targeted. One of them, interestingly, is a retreat with Ezra, my co-host on Think, Act, Get, and we're having a little retreat in Hawaii for some of our top listeners. And this is a great podcast monetization test for us to go to a tropical resort lifestyle sort of area, hire out a house, all food and transport covered, and then brainstorm with a very small group. And it's very rewarding to be able to do that sort of stuff. It's really, if you can think about it, it probably can happen, right?
Yeah, definitely. And I will tell you, I mean, if this is your first time doing that, there's nothing more fulfilling than getting a small group of people into a room together and just creating that energy and brainstorming together. Chris Ducker and I, we got together in San Diego when he was here in the U.S. for a one-day, we call it our one-day business breakthrough event. We had 25 people pay $500 to come hang out with us for the day, and we just tore down everyone's business and built them back up all together. And honestly, you know, I know people got a lot of value from Chris and I, but a lot of people got a lot of value from everyone else that was in the group too, helping each other out. And we just ended the day like, wow, that was probably one of the coolest things I've ever done. You know, even though it was only 25 people, it was, you know, these people's lives have changed. And we've since talked about doing more of these sort of small, intimate sort of get-togethers.
Right. Yeah, well, I've done about 8 events with 100 or 200 people. And I've done about 7 with 6 to 12 people. So I know what you're talking about. And I do like it. I actually used to have people come to my house and we sort of like, I probably got the idea from Perry Marshall way back. He does some bobsled run, and I thought, that's pretty cool. Have your best customers pop over, look after them. And I think it is a great sort of low pressure way to be running events. In fact, yesterday, you know, I've got another podcast, Freedom Ocean, with Timbo Reed, and we were talking about how to run an uncomplicated event. That was actually the topic, and we just went through our checklist, and it is very simple. I mean, I just walked next door here. I'm at Manly. I walked next door to the hotel. I've booked the ballroom for March next year, and I'm going to have 150 or so people come to an event. It's really just a matter of just setting the date, choosing the content, inviting some people to come over, and putting on a show. But the best thing, as you said, I think it's the member-to-member, the peer-to-peer connection, because in the internet space, it can get a little bit lonely and a little bit isolating, and especially when a lot of people around you, before you quit your job, will be quite, you know, cautious about your level of engagement on the computer for not a lot of return. I think I'm probably going to be tugging on some nerve endings here, but it certainly happened to me. My wife used to come into the room because I was running a full-time dealership, you know, and she'd say, "Are we rich yet?" And I'd say, "Not yet, but, you know, soon." And, you know, finally we got there, but it can be very difficult, and I think it is absolutely essential to go to live events. And that's why I get out of my house every quarter at least. I'll fly somewhere else in the world and go to an event. I'll go and meet people, or I'll just have friends come. I've been hanging out with another podcaster this week, Dean Jackson. We've been going to some meals and having coffee and just talking. But the exchange of information at that level is unbelievable compared to trying to suck it down off a podcast here and there. Face-to-face is unbeatable.
Yeah, you can't. You definitely can't beat it. I mean, the connections I've made, the friendships I've made, and the information I've learned just through sitting down and eating at a cafe with people is just unlike anything else. And it's scary at first. I remember going to my first conference in 2010. It was Blogworld, and I felt like a fish out of water. I was just like, so much stuff going on, and it was a little intimidating. And luckily, I knew a few people and just hung out with them the whole time. I think that's, you know, it's best to go to those things with somebody you know, and to just try to meet as many other people as you can as well. I mean, you got to get out of your shy zone. That's for sure.
Let's talk a little podcasting tech stuff for a sec.
Let's do it.
And I'm sorry to the listener if this seems a bit rambly, but I haven't ever spoken to Pat before, and I've got a list of questions to ask him, and I'm just going to ask them. Now, you use Libsyn to distribute your podcast?
I use Libsyn to host the files.
Right, and you've been using your little John Lee Dumas keyword hack lately by the look of it?
Well, actually, I was the first one to do that. Internet Business Mastery was the first to do that.
He told me he sent you his cheat sheet. So you guys have, I demand a fight to the death at 20 paces.
I mean, I haven't changed my title since I started in 2010.
That's right. Now, so, just for the record, I logged into Blueberry, if anyone's using that, and I found where I can change the keywords, and I checked it out and switched mine around yesterday, and it's already in the iTunes store. So it appears that whichever tool you use these days, you're able to control that. But John's put a lot of effort into that particular technique.
Yeah.
I think it looks spammy.
I do too. He's putting how many keywords in there, and he's putting other people's names. I mean, that's, in my opinion.
I think I've talked about this before at my event when we were recording Think at Get episode. And I said, look, I've seen what's been done, and I don't think I'll be doing it. So I'm just going to take a longer term sort of view. I have to earn my listeners, probably like Dave Ramsey does. You know, he's just got Dave Ramsey in his title.
Right. I mean, but if you look up blogging in iTunes, I am ranking number one.
You are the man.
But, you know, and John had the number one business podcast for a while, and he also somehow, this never even happened to me, he got contacted by Apple to have a little feature.
Yeah, I've seen it on the top, the featured thing, and so did my friend Timbo Reed with the Australian iTunes thing. He's got Small Business Big Marketing banner in there.
Yeah, that's awesome.
That's pretty cool. So if it got in that, it's a great result for the technique, but I do consider it a trick.
It is a trick.
So, Pat, you often talk about fear. Speaking scares you or scared you. You've gotten...
Still scares me a little bit.
I believe you practice. Like, you practice a lot, wouldn't you?
I practice like mad. Anyone who has gone with me to conferences know that the day before the conference, you're not going to see me. Or the day before I speak at the conference, you're not going to see me because I'm in my hotel room. I actually dress up in the same outfit that I'm going to wear when I'm speaking and try to make the environment that I'm in as close to what it is going to be when I'm speaking. I also typically go into the speaking venue or wherever room I'm going to speak in, you know, when it's completely empty, and just walk around the room and get familiar with it. You know, as many things as I can do to increase my chances of being comfortable, I'll do that.
Yeah, well, I have a similar ritual. I put shoes on before I speak to get myself, you know, feeling a little more like I'm going to fit in with society. But I do recommend standing on the stage before you speak, if you can. Almost always they've got a bump in the night before or very early in the morning, and it is good for first time speakers. One of the other things is to stand still. It drives me insane seeing rookies running. They burn a hole in the dance floor, it's called, and they run up and down the stage because they're so nervous, that energy's dribbling out.
Yeah, my very first presentation, I was just pacing back and forth in a little 5 foot area.
Mm, it's very common. That's the one thing. I put up speakers who have never spoken before at my events all the time. And the one piece of advice is check out the room before you speak so you feel comfortable with it. It's not a surprise. And the other thing is just stand still. Yeah. And I give them the speaker stance, you know, feet shoulder width apart, and just plant them into the stage like a tree.
I mean, movement is okay in certain points, and I actually use movement to emphasize certain moments during the presentation. But yeah, at first it was like I watched myself. I recorded it and I watched myself, which I also think is a really important thing to do if you really want to start doing this more often.
Yes, absolutely. Much better than practicing in a mirror, because you're never going to speak to a mirror, right? And you don't look the same in a mirror. Record yourself and play back the recording the same as they do in sports teams.
Yeah, totally.
What else scares you, Pat?
What else scares me? Spiders, dude. Like,
why?
I don't know if we want to talk about it. I had a really...
No, we should. We should. I went to Taronga Zoo a few weeks ago. We have 6 of the top 10 deadliest spiders in the world, apparently.
I've never visited
and
you.
Even with the funnel web, there hasn't been a fatality since 1960 or 70-something, and there's ain't even... Like, the chance of dying from a spider is almost nil.
Yeah, but you can still get really hurt, right? Like...
Well, look, they bite you. So what? Yeah, you better not come to Australia.
I have family in Brisbane, so I'll probably be there soon. But I had a sort of traumatizing experience when I was little. I mean, it wasn't – when you hear it, you're going to be like, what? That's lame. But it's like I used to actually collect spiders for class, and I would put them all into a bucket. I had maybe 200 in there, and then I forgot about them. And then I went back, and maybe a month later in this bucket, there were – I want to say tens of thousands of random types of baby spiders in there, and just crawling around, and feel like I just kicked over the bucket because I was scared, and I was just really scary. And then that same night, for whatever reason, a spider was crawling on my blanket when I woke up in the middle of the night. It was right in front of my face. And
that's like a Brady Bunch episode in Hawaii.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tarantulas.
I remember that. And I don't know why those two things happened in the same day, but they did. And ever since then, my wife has to go and kill the spiders in the house for me.
You don't kill them. They're killing all the insects, the flies, the mosquitoes. They're good for the environment.
Well, I don't know what she does. I leave the room, so maybe she just puts them outside.
Good. I hope so. What do you think the most successful thing you've done to date is? I know you've done all sorts of things. You've got you've done a course. You've had a book, I think. And yep, you've spoken. I know you're probably going to say you got married or had kids, but I mean business-wise.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you said that, because I was going to say being able to stay home while raising my kids was going to be what I was going to say.
That's still, I think, sort of half business. They're not having to work for someone else. Did you get terminated or something? You lost your job?
I got let go, yeah.
Right. So that would be a massive kick in the guts, I could imagine. And my dad got let go, and they lost all their money when I was a kid, and it kind of traumatized me, and I fought like hell not to be in that situation. And I managed to escape employment without being sacked, which actually felt like was a big achievement and lucky.
That's awesome.
But I remember almost shedding a tear when I realized that I could no longer be sacked. That amount of control, that grip, that vice grip that an employer can just squeeze on you at any time was a huge factor for driving me. And I imagine you had a similar motivation.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. And it reminds me of a story after I got let go and after my business started to take off, selling these guides and practice exams in the architecture industry. My old boss, who had let me go, called me back a few months later. He was let go too, and he started his own firm with a couple other people that were in the firm who were still there after I left. And he wanted me back. He wanted me to come back. He said, we'll pay for your move, we'll increase your salary. And it was the best no I had ever said in my life, just knowing that I was on this path of working my own for now. And even with the opportunity to go back and do even better, that I knew that that wasn't the right thing for me.
That is awesome. That's kind of like you finally got to leave your job in a way.
It was closure, actually.
Yeah, it's closure. For me, closure was ending up, I was just minding my own business. One of the guys at this old place that I used to work, like the first Mercedes-Benz dealership that I worked, called me up for a website. And then I had just asked him if he had a car there in stock for my wife. And he said, yes. We went in, had a look, bought a nice Mercedes-Benz for my wife. And she said, isn't that the one you like? And she pointed to the AMG. I said, yes. She goes, you should get it. So I said, okay. So I bought 2 brand new Mercedes-Benz from the place that I started selling Mercedes-Benz in 1997 when I had a little baby. I had 2 kids back then. I got 4 now. And it was the closure was, this was like 3 years ago, sitting on the other side of the desk. instead of being the salesperson, being the customer. And I'd finally, because all these people buying the cars were business owners, not employees, and they were all smart and nice people too, interestingly. A lot of them were very humble and nice. The people with money weren't trying to tell everyone about it. And it just felt nice to transition onto that other side of the desk and to be the customer, to be, you know, the hand over the key and then you drive out. It was,
yeah, that's awesome.
You know,
that's
I'd watched really that cool. for a decade on the other side of the desk. So I suggest an action step for our listener would be to identify something that you have a yearning to close and see if you can close it.
I like that.
Okay, so if I could sit someone here who was complaining to you that you've given all this free stuff and that you've sold out, what would you like to say to them?
I'm going to continue to provide all the same free stuff. You're not losing out on anything. Nothing has changed. I just sort of added something else. And if you don't want to pay for it, then fine. Don't pay for it. I mean, no pressure at all. I'm not forcing you to. I've told you what it's about. And if it's not for you and you can't afford it, that's fine. That's fine. I'm still going to provide like I always have. Nothing has changed.
That is good tips. Now, Pat, do you do a lot of advance planning?
I do. I do. Can you better specify or sort of clarify what you mean exactly?
Okay. Well, just from my observation, you're quite, you have a high attention to detail. You don't like to leave things to chance. And I imagine that you have a little future map in your mind. And I'm wondering if you want to share some of that with the listener and sort of, you know, what does the future look like for you? Have you got a fixed idea of that? Have you got steps laid out? Have you laid your train tracks, as I talk about in my business mastermind, or are you chancing it to the breeze?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I think it's important to strive for goals, you know, long-term goals like that, you know, 5-10 years out. But also I think it's important at the same time, and this is something I live by. You know, I am pretty, you know, open to change. And I know that, you know, you could plan all you want, things happen. And the most important part is understanding how to adapt to different situations that happen around you. I mean, that's something I feel like I'm very good at, especially since I learned that I could do that after getting let go. But I do have certain things that I want to shoot for. And, you know, a couple of those things are, it's, for instance, a traditional book. And as much as, you know, the ebooks are starting to reign the throne now, I have always wanted to, ever since I was little, to publish a traditional book and go to the bookstore with my kids and be like, check it out. That's daddy's book. And I wanted to be that example for them that, you know, you can follow your dreams. You could do, you know, things like this as long as you work hard and are patient with it. I've always wanted to just go to the bookstore and see my own book there. So writing a traditional book and I have, you know, thanks to the ebook that I came out with recently and also the podcast that I have, I've recently hooked up with a few people who are going to help me be able to do that and realize that goal, which I'm very, very thankful for, you know, literary agent and publishers and things like that. So a traditional book. And I just want to continue to grow my audience and you know, be the example of someone who is doing business in the way I think most people feel business should be done, especially online. I've sort of unintentionally got put on into this leadership role online, and I'm embracing it, and I understand the responsibilities that come with it, and I appreciate that so many people are watching what I do because it's going to make sure that I continue to go down the right path. And that's why it was so interesting, you know, tying back to this product development that I just did. A lot of people feel that that's going down the wrong path. But from a business perspective, if you want to create a long-term lasting business, you have to create stuff of your own, because like we talked about earlier, I mean, Bluehost could change its model and be a company that I don't want to promote, or they can just end our affiliate relationship, or a company would buy them out and get rid of the affiliate program, whatever. I have to create something on my own, and it allows me to better communicate the experience, or it allows me to better communicate and control the customer experience or people in my audience. You know, for a while, I was, you know, it's so funny that I got this backlash, and it was a very little amount of backlash, but, you know, it should be talked about and heard. But it's so funny that I got this backlash after for so many years promoting other people's products. The moment I have my own and I feel like I can better control the customer experience and continue to work with them after they've purchased this product, I get backlash. Whereas before, I would just send them to someone else and then that's it. I wouldn't hear back from them, or I wouldn't know how they were being treated exactly. So you know, continuing to develop this product, I guess going back to your original question, is what I'm going to be doing. And I'm, you know, the product I have now is closed. It was only open for 3 days, and I'm working closely with the people in there now, with the members, to just improve the heck out of it. We're adding features every week. We're adding new lessons and content. And I'm going to probably be reopening it later this year, if not early next year. And it'll be something amazing. I took a very lean approach with it. Obviously, it was enough to provide value and do everything it said it was going to do and more. But I didn't do a lot of things I initially wanted to do in there. A lot of the features and you know, the vanilla and the icing on the cake type stuff, because I wanted to make sure and speak with the people that were in there to make sure that that's something they would want. And I was very inspired by, you know, a lot of reading on lean startup models that I've been doing lately, like Eric Ries and the Lean Startup.
Absolutely. And Ash and Noah Kagan and all those guys are interested.
Yep.
It's a terrific way to go about it. And here's the great truth. As I've had forums now for about 5 years, that it's not about having more stuff in there, and it's actually, if you could deliver the least amount possible, then you'd be doing your listener a favor. And Dean Jackson put this beautifully before. If you gave me $1,000 today and tomorrow I give you $2,000 and you had to do nothing, would that be a good deal?
If I gave you $1,000 and then you gave me $2,000.
You give me $1,000 today.
And I didn't have to do anything.
And then I give you $2,000 tomorrow.
Yeah.
And you don't have to do anything. Is that a good deal for you? Right. So it just proves that it's not about having to do stuff or having a lot of things to consume. Mm-hmm. The result you want is a return on your investment. And if you can deliver that with the minimum amount of stuff, you're actually helping people. I've found by archiving a lot of my training in my community, it's encouraged the member-to-member contributions. And it's quite interesting, but you can really do a lot more with a lot less. And I think to some extent you've proven that on your blog, because you haven't been – I wouldn't say you're prolific with your content. Mm. You have a lot of content, but you've been doing it for a long time. Your frequency isn't as high as others, like John or other podcasts, but you have such a solid customer base, and that's because you're delivering the message in the content. You're moving people with what you do put. Yeah. When you put something out, it's high caliber. And I think with back to the hosting scenario, it's not a case of if, it's a matter of when. You have to think as a business owner, if your responsibility to your primary shareholder, which is probably you, your family, is to stay in profit, that means you have to get and retain a customer. And yeah, a lot of that is outside your control when it's an external party. And the chances of you still promoting that specific product in years from now would be slim.
Yeah, I mean, just think about that. Will I still be able to make $30,000 a month from promoting Bluehost 10 years from now? You know,
No way. It's not going to happen. So, the underlying strategy that I would recommend would be to assume it doesn't exist. Just to put it up on a whiteboard, write down where all your income comes from, pick the biggest one that you have the most risk as a percentage or actual dollar profit, and put a line through it and answer this question. What will I do if I no longer have Bluehost income? And the answer to that is what you should be doing now anyway.
Absolutely.
That's a constraints exercise. Well, Pat, you've been super generous. We've been all over the place, but I really wanted to touch that topic of customer buck back when you provide a lot of stuff for free. I think thinking out loud, I think I can see you migrating to more of a control position where you're creating your own universe and dialing in the levers that make that work well, and it's the next growth phase, and it certainly will be more profitable for you in the long run. And it's much harder for people just to come and cut and paste you, which I imagine must happen an awful lot. It's like, oh, this is how Pat makes money. I'll set up a hosting offer and do some free training and blah, blah, blah.
But I think people forget, you know, how much hard work has been put into creating this community.
Into creating a passive income?
Yeah. And all, creating the passive income is not passive. You know, it takes a lot of work. And you know, a lot of people, you know, with the free content that I provide, you know, it's so good, I feel, that you know, and I'm told that people would pay for that. So the moment I come out with something of my own, you know, most of my audience were more than happy to purchase this, you know, this product. The people who are interested in it. I mean, there were some people who emailed me in the past who were like, I don't care what you create, just whatever it is, I want to pay you back somehow. And I've had a few people who, I mean, I don't know why they did this, but they would actually, I mean, this is insane, but they would just be like, hey, here's my credit card number. Whenever you come out with something, just make it easy on me, just charge it. I don't care what it is. I mean, that just sort of exemplifies the sort of, you know, this relationship that I have with my audience and you know, the idea of reciprocation. And I think that's really what my business model is all about is, you know, sharing so much, giving so much value that people want to pay me back. And for a while and for still now, you know, the opportunity to do that was through affiliate marketing. And now I'm just giving them another opportunity through an even more value add, which is the products that I'm creating.
Wait till you get the confessional emails in a year or two from now. It'll be, hi, Pat. Just want to let you know, I feel really guilty. I downloaded your product from a torrent and I used it and my business went really well. And I've felt bad about it ever since. And I feel I want to apologize to you and also send you money for the course, because that's what I get now.
Yeah, I mean, I've had people send me money through PayPal for no particular reason, just because they, you know, actually this was back when I first started with Green Exam Academy, when I had all that free information before I sold my ebook in October of 2008. People would were sending me, you know, donations just because they felt like they needed to pay me something for
that was
everything
like
I was doing.
The tip jar blogging culture.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Nice. That is good. Yeah, I think you're going through a massive phase here. It's very interesting to watch. And I do hope we can come back and talk about an update in the future. It's nice of you to put me into the schedule. And because I've been aware of you, I've also been inspired by how lean you run that affiliate side of the business. It's very good. And I think that a lot of listeners can take some cues from that. You pay a close eye to the numbers, which does not happen enough in business. It's essential. And, onwards and upwards. Hey, great success to you.
Hey, thanks. And I can only say the same thing to you, James. It's been great to connect and finally chat with you. I don't know why we haven't chatted before this, but I hope we can, even outside of the podcast, you know, reconnect with each other and just see how we're doing.
Well, absolutely, since we seem to have all the exact same friends.
Right.
All right, Pat. Well, I'll let you go. Have a nice evening and we'll speak soon.
All right. Take care, James. Thanks.
Discover how to build your business
super fast.
Check out superfastbusiness.com.